A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Seen the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day. It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos with you this morning. We have given Ton Bettis the day off. So with me, Sheridan Hansen and J.D. Gunnell from the USU Extension. And we are going to begin the program this morning about talking about planting. We want to plant. Everyone wants to plant. So when is it too early to start planting indoors? The number to call with you with your questions this morning, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. And I know that Sheridan and JD, we're all just kind of itching to start some planting indoors, outdoors, wherever we can. When is it too early to start planting?
Right now.
It's too early right now. But we this is a good time for planning.
Yes.
It is.
We actually did a short little video clip yesterday and put it on our Garden Guys and Gal social media post, but we discussed in length of how we just need to chill out right now.
Yeah.
I mean, take cues from nature. Just cool down. A lot of the vegetables that we grow, and Sheridan, we were talking at the break, she is the queen of vegetables.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Nope.
And so,
John says the same thing, Sheridan. So
it's all true. So she's going to get in specifics, but I know enough from doing it myself and starting seeds. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've started this time of year, and the problem is these vegetables can pop within 4 to 6 weeks and be mm-hmm. ready to plant. So if you do 4 to 6 weeks from now, it's not going to be warm enough to plant. So if you do it now and they end up sitting in containers too, then you have more problems.
Absolutely, and it depends on if you're planting warm season plants or cool season plants. So things like, kale and lettuces, those we're going to be starting sometime in February, getting those up and going. But things like tomatoes, specifically peppers, those types of plants, anything that likes temperatures that are warmer, we're not even going to look at those until March, mid-March, somewhere in there, depending on where you are along the Wasatch Front as well. So your climate can determine some things. So JD will start things in Cache a lot later than I will start things here in Davis County.
Yeah, even, so just to introduce you to my brain a little bit.
I don't know if I can handle this.
I actually look at a calendar and I remember things by holidays.
Yes.
So I usually think of cool season stuff being ready to plant about St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
Because green and green.
Right. And as soon as the ground is really warm enough to work, we can get some of those hardier cool season crops in, things like kale and cabbages, those
peas
types of things.
And radishes.
Yeah. Those types of things can go in March. So.
And honestly, I don't start those things indoors because they grow so readily in the dirt.
Right. And especially things like peas. We don't really want to start those indoors. It's going to cause some problems because they're going to be a lot warmer and then we're going to put them out into this cold environment. Peas do so well just right, yeah. Plopped right into the ground. So
I probably need to apologize. I said a swear word. I said dirt.
Yes.
And it's actually soil.
It's soil.
Yeah.
Oh, I said dirt earlier today.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
And so when I start my warm season stuff, like the tomatoes, the squash and melons, I usually do that the 1st of April. So April Fools, because weather's going to fool you all the
right,
time.
Right. And I mean, if you're going to use some of the season extension techniques like wall of water, anything like that, you can start a tiny bit earlier. I usually don't start my tomatoes until 4 to 6 weeks when I would be planting outside. So for me, that's Mother's Day. So I'm going back 4 to 6 weeks. That puts me right at the end of March.
Or the 1st of April.
First of
that's
April.
That's why I start my seeds indoors, my warm season indoor plants April Fool's, and then they're ready to go out around Mother's Day.
That's right. So you kind of have to think about that, how much time you need before you can plant that outside, and you kind of have to count backwards on the calendar a little bit.
Or you just look at the side of the back side of a seed packet.
And, and it will tell you, you know, sow this, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks. Sometimes it says even 10 weeks. It depends on the type of plant that you're growing. So, and a lot of that information, if you're going to be purchasing seeds online, or if you're going to be purchasing from local sources for seeds, that kind of information will be on the back of the seed packet, or it will be online in the how to grow section on each one of those different types of plants that you're purchasing. So you have to do a little research. I actually get a little geeky about it. JD's laughing. Okay. Well, a lot geeky about it. I make a spreadsheet of everything that I need to plant, and I have it sorted by planting dates so that I can stay on top of when things need to be planted.
But that's a great now thing to do right now, Sheridan. So that's
it
great
is.
Advice.
It's
a, I mean, plan what you want to plant and then, you know, write out the dates.
Yeah, and it gives you, you know, something to look forward to, and you can kind of dream about what your garden's going to be like, and then you can be organized on top of it. Organization is key, right?
Now we're getting an insight to your brain.
Yeah, I have to have a spreadsheet tell me what to do because my brain is scrambled.
So for the rest of the population that is not a plant geek and does not feel organized like you, which I fall in that category, we actually have what's called the Gardener's Almanac.
Yes, it's a great tool.
It's a month-to-month checklist with hot links that you go online and click on Gardener's Almanac USU, and it's a list based on the calendar month of things you should be doing. And on each of those tasks, there's kind of a highlighted hyperlink that you click on that, and it will take you to a fact sheet with more information.
Which is awesome. I love that. And, I mean, you may have to adjust the dates just barely based on where you are, and that's okay. Just remember, you need to know if you're a little warmer, a little cooler. So is that based along the Wasatch Front?
It is based along the Wasatch Front. Okay. And so, like, the high mountain valleys, I mean, if you live there, you just know.
You
have to adjust things by about 2 weeks.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're on the backside, the Wasatch back, you know that you're going to be a little bit further behind. So, but it's a great tool to use.
We have mentioned how more people are getting into gardeners. So a new gardener would wonder, well, what's the problem? Why can't I start them a little bit early? Wouldn't they just be bigger and healthier to go outdoors? So maybe describe why that's not always the best idea, though.
That's a really good question. Bigger, you know, we tend to think bigger is always better. And it may not be the case, especially on things that, you know, you can't really fix the legginess. So on a tomato, if I plant it way too early, it's going to get very tall. It's going to get what we call leggy. So the stem is going to elongate, and we're going to have leaves spaced kind of long. It's going to look kind of anemic and not great. But we can fix a tomato. We can plant it deep, because it has this amazing stem that has these little hairs on it that will become roots. But some of our other plants, we can't fix that. And some of the nutritional needs are harder to manage as plants get a little bit older. So if we start them too early and we're not on top of the nutrition and our plants get leggy, we're just not going to be quite as successful.
Right, and that doesn't even mention problems with the container becoming too small,
right,
or
too
the
small.
Watering issues that come up as well.
Yeah, definitely. So
you can tell I've tried some of these things. Yes, I do know. Yes.
Yep, that's the school of hard knocks again.
Yeah, right? I mean, other things, like, and you've kind of alluded to some of the other things, you know, you got to make sure you have a great container size. You got to make sure you have enough light. So light becomes an issue, probably one of the biggest issues. And so if you're going to start seeds in your house, make sure you have a really good light source. We recommend a full spectrum bulb that you can put just on top of those plants. You want to put it just a couple inches above so that you have nice, short, stocky plants. We don't want them to elongate.
And that's the mistake I see with most gardeners that start things indoors, is they have the lights about a foot above the plants, and that's not enough. They actually have to be 2 to 3 inches above those little plants,
right,
to get that intensity of the light.
And I always get asked, can I start my seeds in a window? Is that enough light? And typically it's not.
No.
It's just not intense enough. So we have to add some light, some supplemental light. And you don't have to have special bulbs, LEDs, that kind of stuff. You can just have a nice
shop light
that, you know, even the fluorescent, as long as it's a full spectrum light, it has all the different colors of light in it, we'll get some good growth on our plants.
Ton told us his favorite places to get seeds last week, but I'd like to hear from you. What do you recommend to people? Where should they go and buy their seeds?
So, I mean, the first place I'd like to tell people to start is at our local nurseries. The plants that they sell or the seeds that they sell at the local nurseries are well adapted to Utah. They're successful here. They work really well. So hit those local nurseries for the plants that you want to have kind of as staples.
The workhorses.
The workhorses. Mm-hmm. So you always want to have some of those tomatoes and peppers and things that you know are going to grow really well and be successful. And then you can add some funky stuff. And that's where I get really excited because I love to grow funky stuff in the garden.
So you have the workhorses and then the pretty ponies.
And then we have the pretty ponies. So places that I like to source my seeds. I mean, there are so many. There are little tiny companies that I like to support, like Pine Tree Garden Seeds. You know, you can get some really interesting varieties if you follow some people on Instagram that have some of these seed saving capabilities. I mean, they're not mass distributors, but you can kind of get some of those really wild things there.
And there's companies that focus specifically on different plants. So there's like Totally Tomatoes.
Yes. And places Johnny's like that. Johnny's is one of my favorite places to get plants because they have such a big variety and their prices are usually really good. And then Baker's Creek, which is rareseeds.com. Their website doesn't match their name, which I always find interesting. But they specialize in some of these more rare plants that are collected from all over the world. And those you kind of have to be a little careful with because our growing season may not be conducive to some of these plants. It may be that they need 130 days to reach maturity, and we just don't have mm-hmm. that here. So
That's a good growing season in Cache Valley.
That's a really good growing season in Cache Valley. So, I mean, there's a million places that I source seeds from, and I probably order from 6 or 7 in different places every year. But
the thing that I like about these companies is if you send them an email and say, I'm interested, all of a sudden in your mail, you will get so many magazines.
Every day.
You'll have reading material for months.
Yeah, you're going to need a bookshelf.
All right. Well, the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome to the KSL Greenhouse Show, and thanks for spending your Saturday morning with us. We have given Ton Bettis the day off, so joining me this morning, Sheridan Hansen and J.D. Gunnell from the USU Extension. And so let's get into some of the questions we have this morning. We have Clyde on the line again from Midvale. And Clyde, how can we help you this morning?
Yes, I have a red leaf maple in front of my house. It's been beautiful for many years. It's starting to die within the interior. How can I reverse that?
So there's a lot of types of maples. Is it a Japanese maple by chance?
I think it is.
Okay. And what direction is it facing? Is it south facing, west facing?
It's facing north, but it's on the east side of my house, but faces north. It's mostly shade.
Okay, perfect.
From my house next door.
Okay. How big is it?
Oh, it's probably 20 feet tall right now. It's been in about 15 years.
Okay. So trees will do it. It sounds like a healthy tree other than dying in the middle. And Trees have this mechanism that if the leaves are not producing photosynthate, if they're kind of shaded, those branches kind of get cut off naturally. And so I would just cut any dead or dying branch out from the interior and open that tree up. That's kind of what they want to be. They want to be open and airy. But maples tend to get a disease called verticillium wilt. So when you cut those dead branches off, look at the interior circles, the rings of the tree. And if they're kind of got a dark brown or a green streaking through them, that could indicate verticillium. It's a disease. It's a fungus that lives in the soil. There's no treatment, nothing you can really do, but it is a telltale sign. And if you do see that, You're in the Salt Lake area. I would take it into the USU Extension office there on 2100 South and State and ask to talk to the horticulturist there. Give them your sample, and they can kind of identify that verticillium if it is present.
Very good. Well, but thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
You bet. Great. With COVID restrictions, I would definitely recommend calling and making sure someone is going to be there.
Yeah, and they may have you email pictures. So,
all right. Clyde, thanks for your call this morning. Next texter says they're wondering the best way to treat a mature ash tree for lilac ash borer. They had it injected last spring. What else do they need to do, and how long will that injection protect the tree before they need to have it injected again?
Well, because this is radio, you didn't see my head just drop.
Stop.
I've actually stopped recommending ash trees completely.
Oh, yeah.
They're a hardy, hardy tree. There's a reason that the pioneer era planted ash trees, because they will grow just about anywhere, and they're tough. The problem is, you know, mid-1900s, we got this pest called the ash lilac borer that showed up, and it hadn't been around previously. And where it came from is kind of a mystery, but the problem is we have it, and it loves ash trees. It's like ice cream to that insect. Oh. And so what happens is that insect will come and lay an egg on the bark. As that egg hatches into a larva, it will burrow into the bark and into the interior wood of that tree, and that's where it completes its life cycle. So the hard part is the injections often don't work because it's not getting to where that insect is. It's deep in the heartwood of that tree, and it'll burrow through, cause tunneling, and that's where you start getting the branch dieback, because it's cutting the conductive ability of that tree. It's almost like if you go and have a drink in soda, which I have in front of me, and you have a straw and you're sucking that straw. If you poke a hole through that straw, it's harder to get that water up in your mouth. It's the same in a tree. So those boring holes, those boring insects, make it hard for that water to conduct up to those branches, and it causes a lot of physical damage. So the only good mechanism for treating that insect is a trunk protective spray. And the problem with those are a lot of the chemicals that were treating those borers have been taken off the market because of other issues. Mm. And the other issue is the timeline of that insect ranges from May through September. And so if you're going to be treating ash trees for the ash lilac borer, you're going to be spraying almost every weekend the whole season.
That's
the whole summer,
which is intensive.
Oh.
And that's why I stop recommending ash trees. And like I said, we have over 400 species in the Arboretum, so it's not like there's not other options for you.
But it is hard to lose a mature tree like
it
that.
Is.
It makes your heart just kind of sink. So, I mean, you try all these different things and, you know, try to save your tree, and sometimes you just can't. And that's where you come, you walk through that arboretum, and you pick a new tree.
So. Now, I will say there is a fact sheet online that has a lot more detail that we can get into on the radio. It's mm-hmm. If you look for ash lilac borer USU, it'll pull it up and give you all the different options as a homeowner.
All right. That's such great advice. Next listener says their husband's having trouble growing parsnips. He's tried grow box mix and regular garden soil. Neither has worked very well. They're wondering if you have any suggestions.
Yeah, so parsnips, they can be a little bit tough to get started. I've had some difficulty getting them started myself. So I don't know if they're just not germinating. Maybe they can give me a little more information on that. If they're not germinating or if they're just not growing well, they are a long season crop. They do take quite a bit of time to mature and get full size roots on. So, I mean, if they're not germinating well, then you're going to want to make sure that you watch the moisture level in the soil. So you may have to add a little bit of compost to hold some moisture. You may want to put down a little peat moss into that soil to hold some of the moisture as well.
Because they're a lot like a carrot.
They are. They're in the same family as a carrot. The seeds are a lot bigger than carrots.
But still, if they imbibe water and then dry out, then
they're not going to germinate. So yeah, we got to hold some water. We got to have some really good water holding capacity. Some people will even put down like a sheet of cardboard over them for the first week.
Or plywood.
Yeah, while they're trying to take up that water and get the seed germinating and going, and then they'll take that off and manage the water very carefully. But if it's happening in different type soils, it kind of triggers in my mind that maybe the water management isn't quite where it should be. you know, and once you get them germinated and up and going, they do really well. But I tend to overplant parsnips because I know that, like carrots, there's going to be some that I lose. They just, you know, there are some that dry out or that I miss or something. So, and you can always thin them out once they get going. So overplant a little bit, make sure that you've got that good moisture, add some organic matter, and then you can thin once they come up.
Is there one soil that's better than another?
So I've grown both in raised beds with grow boxes, with a grow box mix, and I've also grown in ground. Both work well. If you have a soil that is really heavy clay or you have a hard pan, growing something that is a root vegetable, you might do better with a up in a raised bed so that you can get that long root growth and get a nice long parsnip instead of a short one with lots of different branching on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Once these taproot type vegetables hit a hard pan or they hit some clay, they tend to split and go in different directions. You end up with really interesting looking fruit, or not fruit, but vegetables. You know, if that's the case, get it up out of the ground into a grow box. You just use a nice mix that is light, easy for it to grow through, and that it has enough water holding capacity. So it's got organic matter, it's got peat moss, it's got something like that in it to hold the water.
We need to take
and
a break.
We do have information.
Go ahead. Do that first.
I was just going to say, we have more information on raised bed gardening in a fact sheet.
We do.
You can look that up. And just keep in mind, raised bed gardens dry out quicker.
They do. So you really have to stay on top of the water management because, you know, we recommend raised beds when we have problems draining our soils, our native soils. So we do that so they can drain nicely, and you just have to stay on top of it.
All right. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We're going to break for the news.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.